Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Kick off your future with the law firm of Condori and Murad, the official Grant and Danny show sponsor. They'll help protect your assets, update your will, and trust. Schedule a free estate planning strategy with one of their Fairfax-based attorneys. My parents did that. Condori and Murad took great care of them. They had a great, seamless process to get their work done, and you will too. Visit them at kmlawyers.com and mention the show to get a discount. kmlawyers.com. Final Nats tickets of the week coming your way in 1 hour. Right here on The Fan, we've got tickets to opening day. Right now, though, let's give away some Caps tickets. In no way did I almost say the wrong thing and then correct myself. That did not happen. I said it exactly as I meant to say.
That's how the plan went.
Right now, you want Caps tickets? We got them. Caller number 10, 800-636-1067. You're winning a pair. You're going to see the Caps take on Ottawa. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events. Courtesy of Monumental Sports. Say hi to Chris Russell when you're there. He will most certainly be in the house.
He'll be there in the great seats.
Slashy gets the hook job.
You have to look down close to the ice and you'll see him. He's one step shy of getting a shift.
I think by the end of the season, he's going to be skating around.
Just get a little fourth-line bruiser.
Defensive pair with Travis Van Riemsdyk, maybe. TVR and old Reaney. Congratulations to whoever wins those tickets. Say hi to Slash for us. It is time for the Beltway Blitz. We'll talk defenders with Jordan Tamu and Caps with Bailey Johnson. We start off on the diamond. Mark Zuckerman, MassinSports.com. Mark, how's Cincinnati treating you? Did we do a little Skyline Chili today?
I did. I went there for lunch, guys. It's my one time a year that I'll eat the Cincinnati chili. I do like it. I don't know if I would want it more than once a year, but it was delicious, actually.
Yeah, on top of spaghetti, not like the old nursery rhyme, you know, all covered in cheese. It's not for me. I see why people do it, but it's something I'd skip. But Mark, Josiah Gray yesterday. I'm making kind of that Michael Scott cringe face. Not great.
No, I think that's the appropriate reaction to it. And, you know, there were a lot of optimism coming into this and him getting his first opening day assignment and facing the team that drafted him. And the first inning went well, and then after that, not so much. And I think the troublesome part is that we saw things that we have seen in the past from him that, you know, when it doesn't go well, that's what it was. There were a couple of walks, specifically a couple of home runs, and a very high pitch count, 80 pitches in only 4 innings. And he was giving up the home runs on breaking balls. One was a cutter, one was a curveball when he was behind in the count and just laid him right over the plate. Davey Martinez talked about we really wanted him to establish the fastball more. He did it in the first inning, did it in the fourth inning, didn't feel like he did that as much in the second and third. And, you know, in the course of 4 innings, Josiah Gray threw 7 different types of pitches. Now, I know this is who he is. He likes to throw the whole kitchen sink at you. He tries to figure out what's working on a given day. But on opening day in only 4 innings, maybe you want to condense that a little bit, figure out what really you are good at, and you don't necessarily have to throw everything at them on the first day. It didn't really work for him.
Mark, Eddie Rosario in the tune-up game Tuesday at Nats Park hit a long home run, and then he had another one even further in Cincinnati on opening day. This could work out pretty well for them, a 1-for-3 with the 2 RBI. What do you think is kind of the best-case scenario with the Rosario relationship?
Well, I liked that signing all along. He was a guy I was thinking of all winter that would make sense for them. And I guess the feeling was that he was still holding out for a better deal. And so they, you know, waited until March to sign him. I arguably could have made the case they should have signed him before they ever signed Joey Gallo, but we know how that worked out. This guy's just a solid baseball player. If he can be the guy that he's been for most of his career, then come July, you know, he's hitting 260, 270 with 10 to 15 homers and driving in runs and just playing good, solid baseball all around. That's a guy who will have value on the trade market. He's played for a bunch of winners in the past. He's been a postseason hero in Atlanta. So, I mean, that would seem like somebody who should be able to command something at the trade deadline. The interesting thing there with him, though, he started in center field yesterday. We got a taste of that in spring training. I think we're going to see more of it, not every day, but Davey's going to put him there, and he hasn't really played that position since about 2017. It didn't come into play yesterday. I do have some concerns defensively what that would look like.
Speaking of concerns, Mark, Tanner Rainey coming back from injury, you know, obviously deserves some grace and deserves some time to get his sea legs underneath him, et cetera. But he didn't throw very hard yesterday, by at least by his standards. This is a guy that was living in the upper 90s, was down around 91, 92 for his inning yesterday. Your thoughts there?
Well, that's what he was throwing this spring, Danny. Yeah. And he kept saying, hey, you know what? I've always done that in spring training. And I look back, and it actually was true. And then by the time the season starts, he's up there in the upper 90s again. It wasn't there yesterday. I don't know if that's just him still working his way back in or that. But, you know, for as much as we think of this as a guy with a track record who has been a closer for them in the past, it is a Tommy John surgery. Yep. He is still coming back to just pitching consistently in the big leagues. You know, he came back and made one appearance last year. He does spring training. I think it could be a while. The good news is they have enough depth there. I really like the bullpen depth they amassed right now, where I'm not saying he's a garbage time pitcher right now, but I don't think they have to use him in high leverage spots. You saw him put him into a low leverage spot yesterday. I would guess there's going to be more of that until they find out and figure out, is he back to who he used to be?
Senzel gets hurt before opening day. Here comes Lipscomb. Nick Senzel to the injured list with maybe a broken bone, it sounds like. And Trey Lipscomb, who was sent down about 48 hours earlier, gets the call. He'll be in the starting lineup at third base, presumably tomorrow in Cincinnati for game number two. What do you think of this?
Well, a lot of people wanted him on the opening day roster. He didn't make it, but he almost made it, as it turns out. He only missed one game. The interesting thing there, they had devised a plan for him going to AAA. They wanted him to play second base primarily because that's a position he has the least experience at least as a professional. And the idea there being, okay, Luis Garcia, you better, you know, peek over your shoulder because this guy's coming. And the Nats seem to think that Lipscomb's going to be their second baseman before too long. Well, now all of a sudden the injury means he's going to be their starting third baseman. The good news is he won the minor league Gold Glove Award there last year. So he's really good at third base. They believe he can hit at least enough. He hit 400 in spring training. So it's not what the plan was necessarily, but it's funny how these things work out sometimes. You feel terrible for Nick Senzel having this happen before game one in the stadium he used to play in Cincinnati. But Trey Lipscomb's about to become their everyday third baseman, I would guess, for at least a month and maybe longer.
Mark, thank you as always, buddy. Enjoy Cincinnati as much as humanly possible.
That's the key, as much as humanly possible. Thank you, guys.
See you, buddy. Hit that cap sounder, Darius. About Bailey Johnson covers the Capitals as well. She's going to talk about the Capitals right now. Bailey, thank goodness they don't play Toronto anymore. I've seen enough of that over these last couple weeks. Combined 12-4 losses over those two games. No thank you. Why don't they match up very well against Toronto?
Yeah, they've seen enough of the Toronto Maple Leafs too. They're pretty happy to be done with that. They struggle with fast, skilled teams. That's kind of been the theme all year. If a team has their number like that, they usually have a tough time, and Toronto is a fast team, a highly skilled team, a team that is pretty deep, can roll four lines pretty well. So when the pressure just comes at the caps and waves, they tend to have a tough time with that. And Toronto just absolutely has their number on every front.
How do you feel about the matchup tomorrow with the Bruins? They've traditionally, over the years, played them very well, including one of their best games on the road all season in Boston.
Yeah, the game they won in Boston in early February might be the best road game they've played all year. They were totally dominant from start to finish, won that game 3-0 to end a 6-game losing streak. The thing they're not going to love tomorrow is that the Bruins are not super happy with how they've been playing lately, and the Caps have ended up on the wrong side of that twice now. Both when they went to Winnipeg a couple weeks ago and lost, Winnipeg had played poorly in their previous game and their coach called them out for it. Toronto last night, Toronto wasn't very good in their last game either, and Sheldon Keefe called them out for it, which prompted the response that you saw last night. So that's not ideal for the Capitals as they're facing a very, very good Boston team. But they were very good against them on the road, and they've bounced back well from difficult games like last night's so far this year. They have, especially over the last stretch, have not really let losses spiral. So they have that going in their favor.
Billy, this Charlie Lindgren story has been awesome. This is not me complaining at all. It's me just raising my hand and wondering. This is by far and away his biggest workload. Are we concerned at all about any kind of wearing down when it comes to, you know, if they're fortunate enough to be in the postseason? Because we're blowing past his games played totals.
Yeah, that's the really interesting thing about it, because it's sort of a catch-22 where they probably won't make the playoffs if Charlie Lindgren isn't playing every possible game for them, given how phenomenal he's been this year and how critical he is to their success. But if they are able to sneak in on the back of Charlie Lindgren, he might not have a whole lot left by the time the playoffs begin. So they've tried to balance it. I mean, they tried to start Darcy Kuemper against Carolina last Friday, and that was short-lived. He made it two periods, and then Spencer Carberry said he had to change momentum of the game. He put Charlie in. Charlie's played every game since then. Last night was difficult, although it's really hard to say any of that was on him. I mean, he stopped 43 of 48 shots. So when he's facing 48 shots in a game, that says much more about the players in front of him than it does about him. But I do think there is a little bit of a concern with him wearing down. It's also, on the other hand, you could argue that because he hasn't played a ton before, he is in a better position to maintain this workload. It's his first time going through it, but it's not like he has years and years of heavy work on his body, which may make him better positioned to handle it. But it is definitely something that I'm keeping an eye on as they head down the stretch here.
Bailey, as a fan, I desperately want them to make the playoffs. I think playoff hockey is as fun as anything that there is in sports. And after no playoffs last year, it feels like it's been 20 years. That said, I'm curious, quantify how big of a deal you think it is for this young group of players and this organization to get into the playoffs this year, even if it's short-lived, versus just playing important games down the stretch. Would it be noticeably different or more helpful in the build? Like, what's your thought on that?
I think it would be, because you see what playing in the Calder Cup playoffs last year did for guys like Hendrix Lapierre and Connor McMichael. They played a really critical role for the Hershey team that won the Calder Cup. They scored the two goals in game seven to send it to overtime. And you can see how confident they are playing really important NHL games right now. And right now they're playing in probably the closest thing to the NHL playoffs they could. A game like the Detroit game stands out to me as, like, that's about as close as you get to a playoff game outside of the playoffs. And the playoffs are just a whole other level. So for them to have that opportunity, see up close firsthand what it's like, even if, I mean, they might thrive, they might struggle, who knows? It's hard to say with 22-year-old hockey players, but for them to have that experience right now at a young part of their career just shows them exactly what it's going to be like as they go forward, and you really can't overstate the value of that experience.
Bailey, thank you as always. Have an awesome weekend.
Thanks, guys. You too.
We'll see you soon. Hit that Defender sounder, Darius.
And to talk about the DC Defenders, their starting quarterback and the reigning MVP of the XFL. They're now merged. They're going to the United Football League with the USFL, Jordan Ta'amu. Jordan, you guys are ready to get the season started this weekend on the road. How you feeling?
Yes, sir. I'm feeling great. You know, I felt like our team's been preparing all training camp, and, you know, I feel like we have the right guys, and I'm excited to go out there and play again.
With the new league kind of merging two of them together, what's going to be different and what's going to be the same?
I think just something's going to be different. I think, you know, this is going to be like the best spring football league talent we'll see in a very long time, with all, like, you know, teams merging together and taking all-stars from the best teams and putting it all together. And, you know, I think everything else from the game standpoint, you know, the extra points is all going to be the same. Except the kickoff. I think that's just the only thing that's going to be different going into this UFL league.
Noon kick Sunday for the Defenders. They're taking on the San Antonio Brahmas. You can watch the game on ESPN. Jordan, tell us about the matchup, what we need to know for our listeners who maybe haven't been keeping up with the Defenders as they've been ramping up for the start of the season.
Expect, you know, same thing as last year. Expect fast football from the offense, and then our defense, you know, expect them to be, you know, flying around. And Greg does a great job of, you know, using his personnel out there for the defense. And expect big plays, expect defensive stops, and expect their running game just to be as effective as it was last year.
Greg is Greg Williams, by the way, for Commanders fans. Yep. They know all about him. He was the defensive coordinator with the Washington Redskins at one point in time. The Defenders will open their season Sunday, April 7th at home at Audi Field. That's the home opener. 6 days after they start their season on Sunday, they'll be welcoming the Houston Roughnecks in a game televised on Fox at 4 o'clock a little over a week from now. So, Jordan, one of the things I like about this new league is that they have the two divisions of the teams that they kept from the XFL and then the teams that they kept from the USFL to kind of allow for a little bit of a rivalry to see, you know, which league might be superior. What do you think of that?
I think it's cool. You know, having two of the joint, you know, leagues come together and creating one, you know, it just makes that competition level, like I said earlier, a lot better and a lot stronger. And, you know, there's a lot of great football players in this league and a lot of great coaches. So I'm just excited how the season's going to play out for each and every one of us.
Scheme-wise, schematic-wise, personnel-wise for you guys on offense, how much is the same for last year?
Scheme-wise, I think it's, you know, likely the same. But, you know, since this is our second year or my second year with the offense, you know, we're kind of opening up the playbook a lot more and doing things, you know, that – you know, I wasn't ready to do last year that I think we're going to do this year. So I'm just more confident, more comfortable, you know, going into this as a starter, as a guy in the driver's seat. So I'm excited to just to go out there and let loose.
Jordan Tamu last season, 1,878 passing yards, 14 touchdowns, and just 3 interceptions for the Defenders, who went all the way to the championship game. They've still never lost a game in 2 seasons of playing at Audi Field. Over 300 rushing yards for the quarterback, Jordan Tamu, who joins us now last season as well, a dual threat. What names might our listeners know in terms of either carryover XFL defenders or maybe some of the new players added to the fold with some NFL time or a college stardom?
You know, Brandon Smith is our only receiver from last year. So keep a lookout for him. He's our only receiver coming back. So this is his second year underneath, you know, Coach Kice. And then our new guys are slots. I love our slots. You know, we got Kiki, we got Chris Rowland, and then our outside guys, you know, with Kelvin. And our tight end group is just stronger as ever with Skip coming back. We got Briley coming back, and we also got Caden. So, you know, those three guys are in rotation, so kind of look out for them. And I just feel like our offensive line just got a lot better. They're more athletic, and, you know, we've done a great job of protecting the rock and them protecting me. So I'm just excited for our offense as a whole.
Jordan, chance to directly talk to the people, to the fans. Any message for DC Defenders fans?
Be on the lookout. Continue to bring the crowd, the energy. You know, when we play in Audi Field again, I'm excited to see the Beer Snake and you know, keep us undefeated at home. That's all I hope for.
Well, Jordan, get off to a fast start. Stay healthy this weekend. We'll see you back at Audi next week, and hopefully you guys will bring that 1-0 record home with you. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That is your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny. We're 40 minutes away from giving away tickets to Nats opening day. Next, an NFL Network analyst and former quarterback in the league had a lot to say about Drake May's pro day. We'll tell you what he said. And what does Jaden Daniels think about the weird picture of his elbow floating around the internet? We're Grant and Danny. How closely have you been tracking draft Twitter, if you will, over the last several weeks?
I would say more than cursory, okay, and less than obsessive.
Well, the last few days have just taken a turn into Crazyville. So have you seen the pictures of Jaden Daniels' elbow that have been everywhere?
Yeah, you can't miss it.
I assume they're fake. Do you?
It looks – it doesn't – if you haven't seen this, none of what we're saying is going to make sense. It looks like he's wearing like an arm sleeve that's like a plastic apparatus that's meant to look like part of an arm. And then his arm's kind of coming out of it. And it's the weirdest looking elbow, arm, mid-throwing motion situation you'll ever see. It looks bizarre.
The way I would describe it is, to me, it looks like if he didn't have an arm from the elbow down, or the elbow up, rather.
Yep.
It's like you just had a pointy nub for an arm. And then you take the rest of his arm and put it on like 3 inches further up so that the end of your elbow is like way past your arm. It's crazy looking. Supposedly, it has to do with bursitis in his elbow, not recently or lately or this season even maybe, but that he had at some point at LSU. But I can't imagine that an elbow looks like that. And I know action shots can be weird. Like, if you look at pictures of pitchers mid-delivery, the way that their arms contorted and their hand is back toward their shoulder, their elbows straight out, you're like, how does an arm do that?
Yeah, this looks like it's going to fall off any second.
No wonder why guys have Tommy John left and right. Because you're just, this is a motion we shouldn't be making 100-plus times a day, a couple times a week. I still think the picture's fake, though. But he didn't come out and say that it's fake. Nobody at LSU did. His coach came out and basically spoke to the photo by saying he had bursitis, but he's fine. It's not going to affect him. He had a procedure done, and it's no longer an issue. But Jaden Daniels has now come out to talk about this. And he said today, I will read you the quote, Danny. It's
okay.
Short and sweet. My elbow is fine. Stop the cap.
Stop the cap.
So translate that for people that don't know about cap.
That means this is lying.
Quit lying.
Stop the lying. Stop the falsehoods. Stop the incorrect and inaccurate statements, please.
Now, that doesn't really get us any closer to any resolution on what's going on with his elbow. Because, of course, he's going to tell you his elbow's fine. And by the way, his elbow probably is fine. I just think one of two things, right? I can pick either path here. You tell me where you want me to go. The first is this picture's not real. If you haven't seen the photo, just type into a search Jaden Daniels elbow. You can't miss it.
Yep. You'll know which one we're talking about right away.
You're like, oh, this isn't a real photo. This looks doctored. There's something fake about this picture. So that's the path I'm going with. The other side, though, is if it is real, I'm choosing not to care about this because the guy just won the Heisman Trophy with 50 touchdowns and 4 picks in a season. And clearly, if his elbow does look like that somehow at any point, he's past it. He's over it. It didn't affect him. So I don't really care about the elbow story. I think it's a nothing burger. I will just point out that the picture is one of the strangest pictures I've ever seen.
I cannot see it. I still can't figure it out. I don't have a better explanation than that. Again, if you see it, you'll understand what we're talking about. I haven't heard a word about any medical things. Now, I know I understand that actual medical examinations are confidential and there's HIPAA laws and everything else, but not one time have I heard through the normal intermediaries, the McShays, the Kuipers, the Daniel Jeremiahs, the everybody in between, teams are dropping Jaden Daniels down their board because of medical concerns. Right? I mean, have you seen that anywhere? If you have, let me know. But I haven't. The concerns were, hey, he may not be heavy enough. He may not be able to hold up to punishment. You know, not that's different. I'm talking about when examinations happen and they go, he has a faulty elbow. It's going to be a problem for him throwing the football. That's bad. I have not seen or heard that anywhere. All I see is this bizarre picture and then like Twitter doctors weighing in.
To tell you, this is a bursa. This is fluid. I just can't imagine a human elbow and arm looking like that.
It doesn't look like a human arm and elbow.
I'm just going to keep imagining somebody okie-doked Ian Rappaport who posted the picture first. And that he just grabbed some photo that was out there that somebody made up. He said, oh, I'm going to make Jaden Daniels' arm look really weird and see if it can become a big Twitter story. That's what I think happened. All right, a couple of things on Drake May. We talked Jaden Daniels. Let's talk Drake May. So he had his pro day yesterday. NFL Network was covering the day, the event, and then in the evening last night, was talking about the NFL draft and a best fit for quarterback Drake May. This is what David, not Derek, Danny.
Okay.
David Carr, so you're going to struggle with
that's
this.
That's David Carr. It's obvious, Grant.
He's not the quarterback of the Saints. He used to play for the Texans. This is what he had to say about Drake May last night.
Going second to the Commanders is where DJ has him going. Where do you think he best fits in this league?
That actually makes the most sense to me. You know, I've talked about this for a long time, just as far as the scheme fits and maybe where some of these guys might land. But if Caleb Williams does go to Chicago, then this is the natural pick. Drake May just fits right in with this system. His ability to move, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, the offense that they're going to run. Obviously, Dan Quinn's going to run the defensive side of the ball. But that offense is going to be spread out, just like this. You're going to get extra pressures. And can you make a play? Can you push the ball down the field? Can you identify that it's zero coverage? You have one-on-one opportunity. And push the ball down the field with sustained accuracy. Sometimes it's easy to be accurate within 10 yards. but can you do it on the run? Can you escape? Can you make plays? Saw Pat Mahomes, obviously a talented player in this league. Lamar Jackson, the MVP. I mean, this is left-handed. I've never attempted a left-handed pass in the history of my career. That was incredible. But he's able to move. He's able to make all the heroic type plays you want. All you're going to want now is a young guy that you can mold. He has the raw ability. Now it's just like what they did with Pat Mahomes. And you get him in a system that you can kind of harness that power and use it for good. And if they can, you got a good quarterback.
That was David Carr on NFL Network. I am positive that he can fit what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do. I know for sure that it can work. I also think Jaden Daniels is a pretty good fit for Cliff Kingsbury. And the beginning of his argument there is, I like the fit because I think he can operate Cliff's offense. I think we feel pretty good about Daniels doing that, too.
I think there's three guys right at the top of the board who seem to be pretty good fits, right? I mean, obviously Williams, but he's not eligible, but yeah.
Yeah, and he's not going to be there. But yes, I think those two guys, to me, it's a fairly easy enough transition. There's offenses that McCarthy will fit beautifully under center, drop back, play action, Shanahan style, throw the ball middle of the field on in-breakers, that kind of offense. Less Kingsbury's, but I think he could probably do whatever he needs to do. Most of these guys can learn a new offense. But that was Carr last night saying May to Washington makes the most sense to him.
Makes a lot of sense. And he's not alone, by the way. There's a number of people who are saying that. Again, there's pretty much this, I don't say it's 50-50, but I haven't done like a master spreadsheet of what column everybody fits in, but you can find an argument from a really smart person who covers this thing, who, you know, looks at prospects not only this year, but year over year, what coaches want, and kind of, you know, tries to marry the two when they're starting to do their prognostications and evaluations. You're going to find an awful lot both for Daniels and for May. Both seem to make a lot of sense.
The CBS draft crew was at the pro day. Ryan Wilson, who we have on the show quite a bit, and former Vikings GM Rick Spielman. He was the guy that the Commanders brought in to help them find their GM and their head coach, who we've had on the show recently. He's gone back and forth, he told us, on May and on Daniels and the top of the draft board. But this was after he saw Daniels 2 days ago and May yesterday. This is kind of where he's settling in.
I got a text that said, "You're crazy if you think Jaden's going before Drake." What is your response to that? During this pro day, I got that text.
Yeah, well, that's just what I said, didn't I?
Yeah, momentarily, but you flip-flopped, so I'm not sure. Are you still on that?
No, I just
it's not crazy to say that Jaden could go first.
I do believe that Drake will go first.
Okay.
We watch them back to back.
So that's based on both pro days in succession. From what I'd heard, there was actually numbers floating around, which I thought was hilarious. Where it was like, how many throws, how many completions, again, they're throwing against air. And for whatever reason, May threw a lot more throws in his pro day. Like the workouts were something like 60-ish throws to 75 or something. But he had, you know, because of that slightly better numbers, I don't care at all about that. You could write those on a paper and light them on fire. From what I had heard, though, Daniels was a little more accurate short and intermediate than May was at the beginning. Like, he got off to a bad start in terms of just ball placement. But then by the end of the thing was just making absurd deep throws. And that was kind of the story after the 2 days was May's deep ball.
Yeah, so Daniels more erratic on deep throws, according to, you know, people that were there that were writing this stuff up. And some of those deep shots from Drake May, people are going, oh, my God.
And then there's the debate of how much should we care? How much should we take out of one day throwing in shorts against no defenders? But people are going to the pro days.
Yeah.
They're writing notes. And the point was, you know, May threw the heck out of the ball down the field. There was a Patriots reporter. I saw this last night, actually, who was on, you know, whatever their NBCS Boston, you know, their monumental is. It's, and he was on as their Patriots insider. They sent him to the pro day to cover the event. And this was what he said about Drake May's throwing session on television in Boston. Remember, Patriots country, he covers the Patriots, so he was there to watch Drake May. They have the third pick.
What did you see today, Saron?
Well, I was sitting there. I don't think I was supposed to be where I was, but I was right on the sidelines to his right. And there was a couple 49ers and Jets scouts, whatever, standing right next to me. He made a rollout throw with somebody in his face about 50 yards down the sidelines, and they started singing the OJ song, Money, 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 Money. So I don't know what the fans, whatever, but from what I saw in the responses of some of the other coaches, Dan Quinn saw a throw. He shook his head and started walking like he was leaving. He saw enough. And I mean, by they were impressed, and they were telling everybody they were impressed. These are the NFL guys. These aren't the fans or whatever. And I've been to Patriots training camp and all this stuff. I've been down
now
on Drake.
He goes on to talk more about the Patriots, but the Dan Quinn anecdote there is what I cared about.
Uh-huh.
He said, I was watching Dan Quinn, and at one point he throws his hands up, and he pretends like he's leaving, like, all right, that throw does it.
I don't need to see anything else.
He's pretty clearly impressed. Mm-hmm. Now, someone will take that to say he wants to draft Drake May, and that's probably dumb, just like it was dumb when people thought he wanted to draft Jaden Daniels.
Game changer.
Because of his word association with J.P. Flame in February. Yeah, that probably wasn't the end-all be-all for Washington. But maybe they'll take Drake May, and maybe they'll take Jaden Daniels. It's not going to be because of those two things.
I know, right? Yeah, there's a lot that's going to go into it. But, yeah, for both of these guys, listen, they're both so obviously so good for different levels, different regions, or reasons rather. I mean, Daniels just finished putting in one of the great college football seasons of all time, period, end of story. And May has every tool that you would ever want if you're designing a quarterback in a lab. Either way, they're both going to look awesome on these kinds of days, right? Throwing to their buddies on their field, on their terms, you're going to see some stuff. But yeah, there's a couple of those type moments that you're going to hear about where, you know, the 6'4", 230-pound guy rolled to his right off his back foot, threw it, you know, flicked it 50 yards down the air, down the field in the air on a dime. You'll hear about a couple of those things. That's pretty special. It's better than your average bear normally when you're working out.
You know who else had a pretty good pro day yesterday that helped themselves that we never talk about? Michael Penix. Michael Penix turned some heads yesterday.
This is a point.
Tell you how next on G&D on The Fan. All Michael Penix did all season was throw darts. Now, he benefited from having one of the great receiving corps in college football history, maybe, when we look back. I mean, they're three deep with guys that could go in the top 50, top 75, perhaps. But Penix, pretty frequently, was just on the money. A dart-throwing sharpshooter from the pocket. He went out to his pro day yesterday, and there was some question, for whatever reason, about his athleticism or speed, I guess, maybe is a better word. I don't know why anyone would care from a quarterbacking standpoint. But he ran out and he ran a sub-4.640, and it blew people away. A lot of people just thought he was not that fast, and that wasn't going to be what he got clocked at. But a handful of scouts clocked Penix's lone run at 4.6 to 4.9, sub-4.6, and there's this idea that he's a little more kind of cinder block footed because he is a pocket passer.
Yes.
Like, this is not a guy that runs around or scrambles a whole lot. Penix said, I'm a 4.4 guy in my opinion. He was the runner-up to the Heisman Trophy last year. Some people had 4.46. Some people had 4.5, but that's unofficial, so I'm good. I just showed I can run, so I feel good. But that was one of the major questions was, I mean, is this guy fleet-foot enough to go make a play, to get out of the pocket, to help himself? I think he's got plenty enough athleticism.
Oh, 100%. He moves really well. Less take off and run and more buying that extra second, sliding around in the pocket. I mean, it's interesting. It's always funny how we talk about that, right? Like, there are the guys that move well and take off, and Lamar Jackson go make a play. Then there's Tom Brady, who wouldn't win any race against anybody at any time, but he moved great. You know what I mean? Like, that slide in the pocket, that subtle movement because a rusher was going one way, so he kind of dips the other to, you know, help his blocker reestablish, let a receiver get open, etc. There's a million ways to do it, of course, but I've said this from Jump Street here. I don't get why there isn't more love for Michael Penix Jr. I wonder if it's just simply because he's left-handed. Like, to me, I wouldn't draft him at 2 because of the age and his knees, because of the surgeries he's had.
You just answered your own question.
But I'm not talking about for 2. I'm talking about somebody that's at 12.
I think there is probably plenty.
Really? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not seeing that anywhere in mocks.
I believe he's going to go before the 20th pick. I think he's going to go in the middle of the first round. If he goes somewhere in the 10 to 20 range, will you feel like he didn't get enough love?
No, that'll feel right to me.
Right. So I think what you're hearing or seeing now are a bunch of people that are breaking down quarterbacks in the draft. And where does it start? It starts with Caleb Williams. He spent a lot of time on him. Drake May versus Jaden Daniels, 2 and 3, spent a lot of time on them. Now McCarthy, Helium, moving up the board. So by the time you get, he's the fifth guy in the class. Your point might be that you would have him fourth, it sounds like.
Yeah. And so Eric Edholm, for example, a guy we've had on who's great, love him, NFL.com, does not have him going in the first round.
Yeah, he's one of the few maybe at this point. But I get what you're saying. There are certainly people that still view it that way. I just would be really, really surprised. But I think the answer to your question is he's old by college standards, by prospect standards, age-wise, coming out. He's had not one, but two ACL procedures done on the same knee, to my knowledge. He played a long time. He played 6 years of college football, man. Mm-hmm. 6 years. So those are all things that get held against you. I was listening earlier. I was coming in. B. Mitch and Finley were talking about the draft, and they were kind of laughing at the notion that like someone's an old man when they're 23 years old. No one's suggesting that he's too old to have kids, you know, or that you know he's so old that he should be playing pickleball instead of going to the NFL.
Hey, wait a minute.
But there's actually a reason why age matters a little bit.
Oh, sure.
There is a filling out, you know, of your body. There is a growth physically, mentally, emotionally that happens between, say, 21 and 24 that isn't as likely to happen between 23 and 24. There are, you know, you're drafting for growth, for, I don't mean physically, like height, but you're drafting for upside and potential and growth, and he is more of a finished product.
You would think closer to finished product.
At 23. That's why your age matters a little bit. Normally, when you get drafted, you're 21 or 22 at the oldest. He turns 24 years old, Danny. 24 this spring.
Yep.
Like, in a month. So he's 3 years older than a lot of the guys that are going to be drafted most years in the NFL, including Drake May. 3 years is a big difference. That's three football seasons. So that is, he's about as old a college prospect as you're going to find. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be really good. Like, Joe Burrow, you'd have to find how old he was when he got drafted. I'll bet he wasn't 24 before the first game, but might have been 23. Doesn't mean you can't be successful. And for the record, I don't know what it sounds like, but I am a, I think Michael Penix is going to be a good pro quarterback. Here's my take on Michael Penix. If you put him on the Miami Dolphins right now, I think he could do everything Tua does. Maybe even better. I like legitimately believe that. You don't have to change the offense. He's left-handed. I think he can make every single throw that Tua does almost as well. I think he's going to be uber accurate. I think he's going to be, I'm not comparing him to this guy, but this is kind of the game I see as a ceiling, like what it could look like stylistically. A Drew Brees where it's accurate, it's from the pocket 90% of the time. When he runs, it's more just scrambling to get down to keep the chains moving, spreading the ball around, playing point guard. And you talked about this, but like pocket movement, real feel for pass rush. Like, I think a lot of those things can be true. 60 touchdowns and six picks. 60 touchdowns and six picks was Joe Burrow's final season. Nobody cared about his age.
None of that stuff mattered anymore.
Yeah. And he had a great year, too, and I think that's why he's in the first-round mix. It wasn't necessarily 60 and 6 in the SEC, though. Yeah.
2 years for Penix at Washington. 31 touchdowns and eight picks in 22. And everyone's kind of going, okay, fine, whatever. Yeah, but. So, he, you know, you think you might come out that year, but I don't think anybody thought it was as sincere. Maybe it was a little bit fraudulent. Maybe the conference was weak. You know, nobody really gave it seriously. Well, then he went ahead and had an even better season the following year, taking Washington within a breath of the national championship. 36 touchdowns, 11 picks, 4,900 yards. I know, throwing to great receivers. That's absolutely true. Same that Jane Daniels did, quite frankly. You know, we hold it against guys sometimes, and other times we don't. I mean, again, Joe Burrow, who you referenced, had one of the greatest, maybe the greatest college football season any human being has ever had.
Right. But, and the
Jamar Chase
him,
and Justin Jefferson.
He came out, he was 23 because he was in college for a while. But he turned 24 with a couple weeks to go in his first season, whereas Penix turns 24 in May, like this May. Before. So it's the difference of several months, but his second season in the league, he's 25 years old.
He'll be 25 years
old
right away. So like that's what you sort of, you think about what you're paying for. That rookie deal would take him through, what, his age 29 season? Which is funny to think about in that regard, right? That's, you know, that's significant in that
but
way.
I think those are the dings. The fact that he ran as well as he did will help him. So you think he's going in the second round, it sounds like?
No, I don't. I still think he's another great case to be someone trades back into the first round or he slips, quote unquote, into the 20s. You put him in a good situation. I think that guy could play.
I've got quarterbacks going 1 through 4. Williams, May and Daniels in some order. McCarthy, 1 through 4. And then I've got Penix going 11 or 12. Whoever doesn't come up to get a quarterback, I think takes Penix.
Either Minnesota, Denver, the Raiders.
Exactly. I could see Knicks going to Denver with Sean Payton. I just think that that could be a fit. But I think Penix is the next one off right there in that 11-12 range. We could have six in the top 12, which would be...
That'd be something.
I don't see that. I think Knicks actually goes early second. And Penix is the guy that goes to Denver in that range. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Tony Pauline, speaking of the draft, we can ask him why Penix doesn't get more love. He has all kinds of insight, super plugged in when it comes to the draft, always has a lot of reports that come true every single year. So we'll talk to him. Plus, we've got tickets to Nats opening day. We are giving those away as soon as we return on Grant and Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.